in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 7th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Our energetic athletics friend, Andy Edwards, has been searching a long way back in his library for this week's chat at his home in North London. About 100 years, in fact. And the story of a South African runner who was the greatest performer at distances beyond the marathon in the 1920s and 30s. His name was Arthur Newton. He won the Comrades Marathon in South Africa 5 times, competed twice in a race across the USA, and set records for running 24 hours and 100 miles. Andy, how did Arthur Newton get started on this epic path?
Arthur Newton, or Mr. Newton, as he preferred to be called by just about everyone he came into contact with, and that included fellow runners, was born in Britain in 1883. He first travelled to South Africa as a teenager in 1901 and returned to settle there in 1911, buying land in Natal to create his own farm. His family back in England was not wealthy. This was a case of a younger son having to carve out a living for himself. He was an extreme example of a rugged individualist, capable of living frugally and physically very resilient. He decided that to make any kind of living, growing tobacco and cotton were the key crops. In short, become an arable farmer. Now, Zulus living in the same area, some of whom he hired to work on his farm, had traditionally reared cattle. This was an early example of Newton, having made up his mind, refusing to diverge from his chosen path. And this led him to a long argument with the South African government and, ultimately, to become the world's greatest ultra-distance runner.
Andy, that's quite a leap. How did Newton get into conflict with the South African government?
From reading his comments over the years, Newton felt that the Afrikaner government was not favorably disposed to the English in South Africa. This was barely 2 decades since the Boer War, after all. Newton wanted to encourage more Zulus to join his workforce on the farm. Cattle suffering from ticks was a big problem. And as an incentive to join his workers, Newton built cattle dips for the Zulus to use. But then in 1921, he found the government undertaking to build a series of cattle dips in the area to combat the disease. And he viewed this as undermining his chances of increasing his workforce. He was an angry man.
Andy, if my math is correct, Arthur Newton would have been in his late 30s by then. And I see he won the first of his 5 Comrades Marathons in 1922. Why did he decide to enter such a grueling race? It's currently 90 kilometers and alternates the start and finish between Durban and Pietermaritzburg.
He believed that creating publicity for what he considered the injustice dealt to him by the government would help win the case in court. Newton felt he had lost everything. He broke off his engagement to be married, saw the prospects of establishing himself as a farmer in Natal fading rapidly. At the same time, it's clear from the books he wrote later about running, he felt a contentment within when he was running, no matter how hard or long was the course, or even how bad he felt. And he certainly did admit to feeling very bad on many occasions. But this was the path he had chosen. He was a cultured man, but very much content within his own skin. He would take records of classical music to listen to in the evening, or what was left of it, on the transcontinental races across the USA, which he did later. He loved to read Shakespeare and other authors, and took pocket editions in his baggage on these races. I think it's important to recognize that Arthur Newton was not an early example of an anti-apartheid campaigner. His anger was with the government, and it was personal. And his response was prompted by a sense of injustice dealt to his own life prospects.
From his debut win in 1921, Newton wins another four Comrades titles, bringing his course record down to 6 hours, 24 minutes, and 54 seconds. Andy, you mentioned races across the USA. Was that next on his agenda?
Once he became a multiple winner of the Comrades, Arthur Newton recognized that in terms of earning a living, his future lay in professional running. At this stage, most athletics was, in theory at least, strictly amateur, and anyone running for money was banished for life. The Olympic ethos preached that athletes should not be tainted by money. But economic distress helped create another form of athletics. Just as boxing flourished as a means to escape poverty, the Wall Street crash and the ensuing depression from 1929 forced many to consider new and sometimes extraordinarily tough ways of making a living. Arthur Newton had proved he could set records outside of South Africa, winning the famous London to Brighton ultramarathon in England in 1924 and returning to Britain to break the world record for 100 miles in 1928. This time he succeeded after narrowly failing the previous year and covered 100 miles from just outside Bath in the southwest of England, starting at 4 in the morning and reaching Hyde Park Corner in London in 14 hours, 1 minute and 10 seconds. And there were thousands waiting to acclaim him.
Andy, did these achievements lead Newton to the USA and the prospect of big prize money?
That was the plan, but the unexpected was often just around the corner. Most of it came in schemes hatched by that larger-than-life character of Charles C. Pyle, event promoter extraordinaire. He was the man who, seeing that what had become known as Bunyan Derbies were increasingly popular with the public in the late 1920s, that is, stage races with anything up to 30 miles or more per day for a good 10 days or more, a race to exhaustion in some cases, Pyle decided to stage the first transcontinental race across the United States in 1928. 199 men were on the start line in Los Angeles, aiming to finish in New York after 84 consecutive days of running, averaging 40 miles per day. Arthur Newton had been recruited as a star, and this is where he met someone who became a lifelong friend, Pete Gavuzzi. Gavuzzi had an Italian father and French mother. The Italian side of the family had emigrated to London in the late 19th century, but Gavuzzi retained fluent Italian and French all his life, in addition to a strong London accent.
Thanks, Andy. That's the energetic Andy Edwards speaking with us from his library in London. And Andy will have more insights about Pete Gavuzzi and the great South African distance runner Arthur Newton during Wednesday's show.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Paul Tergat did that recording at our Voice of America headquarters here in Washington in 2005, just a few days after he won the New York City Marathon in a thrilling sprint finish through Central Park. Tergat prevailed over defending champion Hendrik Ramala of South Africa by about 1 second. Elsewhere in African athletics, 2012 Olympic champion Taoufik Makhloufi of Algeria says he's been marooned in South Africa for the last 4 months due to the coronavirus pandemic. In an interview with the French sports daily L'Equipe, the 32-year-old Makhloufi criticized Algerian authorities for failing to do more to return him home. Makhloufi says, and I quote, "It's been almost 4 months since I have been in South Africa. There was no evacuation, not even a gesture on the part of the Algerian state so that I could return to the country." Makhloufi continues, "This shows that I am hardly considered even as an Olympic champion who defended and honored the Algerian flag. McLoofy defended his Olympic 1500 meters title with honor at the 2016 Rio Games in Brazil, where he won the silver medal. Matthew Centrowitz of the USA won the gold. McLoofy won another silver medal at 800 meters in Rio de Janeiro. He set a new Algerian record of 1 minute and 42.61 seconds. World record holder David Rudisha of Kenya won the gold. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In U.S. auto racing news, Kevin Harvick won his second consecutive Brickyard 400 NASCAR race in Indianapolis, Indiana over the weekend. The AP's Tom McCabe reports from Indianapolis.
Kevin Harvick took advantage of Denny Hamlin's tough luck to win his second consecutive Brickyard 400 and the third of his career at Indianapolis. It's Harvick's fourth win of the season and keeps him atop the point standings.
Now to win it back-to-back at the Brickyard and have won it three times is something that is a little bit surreal, to be honest with you.
With no fans in the stands at the Motor Speedway, Denny Hamlin, who's won four races this year, appeared to be on his way to victory. But with seven laps to go, his car slammed into the wall when it blew a tire. Hamlin was okay. The race resumed with two laps to go, and Harvick was able to hold off Mack Kenseth for the victory. Tom McCabe, Indianapolis.
Yes, sporty greetings. This is three-time Olympian and Beijing 2008 Olympic medalist Chika Chukwumerijie. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. In African boxing, Uganda's Commonwealth Games bronze medalist Juma Miro is on a quest to qualify for next year's Tokyo Olympics. Magume Davis Rakawinge caught up with Miro recently in Kampala, and Magume asked Juma about his training during the coronavirus lockdown.
In this lockdown, it's very hard because all the gyms are closed, and at least I'm lucky. I have a friend who is called Musa. He was a kickboxer, I think, like 30 years back, because he retired. So he has a gym at his place. So I usually come here and hit the bag, and also he helped me with some techniques. And when I go back in the evening at home, because this one I do it in the morning. So in the evening, my grandfather Hussein Khalil also holds for me parts, because now we are not allowed in the gyms.
I know you come from a family of boxers. Hussein Khalil, your grandfather, your brother, your dad. But whom would you say, both locally and internationally, is your hero? Someone you're looking to for inspiration?
I've seen so many boxers in my life, and I've seen like their backgrounds and where they came from. But at least I want to be like Manny Pacquiao internationally, and here back home I want to be like Sherif Bogere. Yeah, because those are my two boxers that I admire in life here.
Now that we know that the Olympics are for certain for next year, what should we expect from you? What are your goals for the next Tokyo Olympics?
I have to first go for the Olympic qualifiers in France, but I'm ready. I've been training, and I'm ready even now to go for it because I've trained well. They have given me everything. I'm well prepared, so when I go for the qualifiers, I'll qualify because I know where I'm going, because I've been following up the thing, and I know all the boxers who are coming, they all came to qualify. So I also trained to see that at least I be in the international level, because everyone who is there is well prepared. So I've trained enough. I'm just waiting for the day to go and qualify. Then I go represent Uganda, and at least this time I bring gold medal to my country.
That's Ugandan boxer Juma Miro, 2018 Commonwealth Games bronze medalist. And Juma was talking with Magume Davis Rakawinge in Kampala, Uganda.
Hello, listeners. My name is Juma Miro, the Commonwealth Games bronze medalist 2018 in Australia. My message about this pandemic, COVID-19, please always wash your hands and put on your mask, avoid crowded places. We know this will end soon and we get back to our game.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's our African Beat host, David Vandy. The South African government recently approved the resumption of football activities in the country. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye called Johannesburg, where he reached African football analyst Lunga Kapiso.
I was pleasantly surprised when the Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture, Mr. Natim Tuetwa, approved plans by the Premier Soccer League to return to play. I mean, it's great news for South African football fans because it means we can anticipate seeing domestic live football in action again. He did make the announcement saying that he considered all the mitigation strategies and plans in relation to level 3, which is the current level for the Republic of South Africa, with all the risk-adjusted strategies in addressing the COVID-19 pandemic. The minister has said that the plans put forward by the PSL have further been subject to analysis by health authorities, including the National Institute of Communicable Diseases, who have recommended that the measures put in place by the Premier Soccer League do meet and in instances also exceed the required protocol for a safe return to training and to play in a biologically safe environment. Now, creating that medical bubble where all teams can be regularly tested and outside interference is reduced, thus reducing the risk of positive cases being introduced into this environment, sounds easy. But when you think about it from a logistic stance, it's not, because there needs to be accommodation that potentially houses all teams and staff. Something like the Sun City Resort here in the north of Johannesburg, Gauteng as a province, which is a 45 to 60 minute bus drive. That holiday resort perhaps could accommodate the entire PSL contingent. Now, all holidaying is on pause in the Republic, and so the resort really can accommodate thousands, usually would be open and ready to provide that kind of accommodation for the Premier Soccer League, provided that it has been medically swept, of course.
What about availability of match venues for the remaining fixtures for the PSL clubs?
And then when you look at the availability of grounds in the province, one can really lean towards Gauteng being the host of the remainder of the fixtures, which the PSL has said it wants to see played out in full. Now, majority of the clubs still have about 6 games to play, with the table leading Kaizer Chiefs with 8, whilst Mamelodi Sundowns, who are 4 points behind in second, have 9 because they've had commitments to continental football. So on each match day, the PSL would need about 8 stadiums for simultaneous games to take place. This is without factoring the first division in the country.
What is the fate of the first division teams regarding logistics and availability of match venues?
Now, if you factor the first division into that equation, and if you look at the resource availability stadium-wise, there aren't too many options with the Northwest and Limpopo regions of the country without capacity for such demand. There have been some suggestions by football fans in the Republic, especially catering to the logistical nightmare that is at hand, that Gauteng or Johannesburg and the KwaZulu-Natal province, also known as Durban to our tourists, are the 2 leading contenders to host what could potentially see the First Division happening in Durban and the Premier League in Johannesburg being the remainder of the season. So stadium-wise in Johannesburg, you have the home of Orlando Pirates, the Orlando Stadium, the Bidvest Wits Stadium, the historic Ellis Park Stadium, the iconic Dobsonville Stadium, Makulong Stadium in the great township of Tembisa, the Rand Stadium in the heart of Johannesburg, as well as the Sinaba Stadium in the east end of Johannesburg. And then to supplement that stadium is the university stadium, such as the one you'll find at the University of Johannesburg and the TAC Stadium in Pretoria, which have hosted some top division football in recent times. You also have the home of Mamelodi Sundowns, the Lucas Moripa Stadium in Pretoria. In Durban, you have Moses Mabhida Stadium, the Kings Park Stadium, Sugar Ray Stadium, Princess Magogo Stadium, Chatsworth Stadium, I should say, Kings Relatina Stadium, the Harry Gwala Stadium, and Mpumalanga Stadium in Hammersdale. Plus, the numbers of cases in terms of COVID-19 cases in that province are low in comparison to Gauteng. And the weather conditions in Durban is another key factor that we must take into consideration, because the province is not as cold as Johannesburg. And in Joburg, we have seen such lows as heavy as -7 degrees on the temperature. So, and that has been over the last 2 weeks. Moses Mabhida, Kings Park Stadium, and the likes could really host National First Division. And then in Johannesburg, you could see it hosting the Premier Soccer League.
That's African football analyst Lunga Kapiso. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Johannesburg, South Africa.
Spotty greetings. I am Lunga Kapiso, an African football analyst. You're listening to the Sunnyside of Sports on the Voice of America.
England will host the West Indies Wednesday in the first international test match series since cricket was suspended in March. Joining us with more details is VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. The wait is over for cricket fans. The sport has been suspended since March due to the global pandemic, but international action is set to resume on Wednesday in the first of three test matches between England and West Indies. The match will be played without spectators, but England's Dom Sibley tells Reuters News, even without the cheers from the fans, he's thrilled the sport has made a return.
It's always a dream for a youngster to play, maybe a test match at Lord's or your home ground in front of a packed house. But obviously, circumstances haven't led for that to happen. So, for me, I'd always choose to have a crowd in, but it's not going to change how I play, who's watching and who's at the ground. So I'm just going to do my thing and try and score as many runs as possible.
The English cricketer is set to open the batting on Wednesday, and fans tuning in we'll see a much slimmer Sibley on the field. He's been nicknamed the Fridge due to his tall physique and full frame, but his teammates might have to come up with a new abbreviated name to match his slimmed down size. Sibley said he began to feel self-conscious earlier this year while in Sri Lanka for a series that was ultimately canceled due to the health crisis. And that feeling spurred him to lose a reported 26 pounds during lockdown.
I've always been someone that hasn't been maybe necessarily the fittest in the squad, and sort of coasting a little bit in that aspect. I've always trained, I've always prided myself on training extremely hard my batting, but maybe that side has probably not been something that I've done to the best of my ability. And I just thought, I remember being in Sri Lanka, especially with that heat and training in that heat, I remember thinking, I think I saw maybe a few of the lads running after a big session, and I thought it was a bit of an eye-opener for me. And it's the first time I've really sort of felt, I've had taps on the shoulders before and haven't done anything about it when I was younger, and I think it was overdue. Regardless of whether it leads to runs or not, it was something that I need to do, and something during lockdown I needed to probably put in the bank, because couldn't do any cricket. So that was a case of me trying to get that sort of tough graft in the bank, and hopefully understand me instead.
And the 24-year-old has already earned his stripes on the field. He averaged over 40 in six matches for England in New Zealand and South Africa and scored an impressive maiden century in Cape Town. And Sibley hopes to nail down a spot at the top of the England upper order in his upcoming match with West Indies.
Obviously, we'll have to find energy within the team and create energy within the team and sort of helped get through that, as obviously the Barmy Army has helped in the games that I played for England anyway. I think if you think back to Cape Town and the amount of energy that they gave us. But, you know, we're very motivated after a long break to, put in a really good performance.
Wednesday's test match will be the first international game of cricket with new post-COVID-19 rules, including a ban on the use of saliva to shine the ball. In addition, group celebrations, fist bumps, and high fives are strongly discouraged. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the July 7th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation of the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's Newsmaker Interview Program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.